Hello, everybody, and welcome to Max Spoilers from MinMax. MinMax is a place about games, friends, and getting better. My name is Ben Hansen. Thank you for being here. I'm joined by Brian Voer.
Howdy.
Andromeda Ross, the Star Wars Guy Fund.
Hey, everybody.
But there's no Star Wars, and there's no fun, and there's no fun to be had here today, because we're talking about The Last of Us on HBO. This is a spoiler cast for the first episode of The Last of Us debuting on HBO. Isn't it cool to see HBO getting behind this in such a big way? Like, they are pushing this hard, baby.
Yeah, it's at the top of the app. They're throwing it in all their big promo reels and everything.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you take all the ingredients of, like, successful IP from the most successful entertainment medium, video games, you got some Game of Thrones stars in there. Walking Dead, at least the main show, is over. Yes? Is that what state it's in? Like, everything's primed for, like, let's give this all the might we can. But it's nice that HBO still has a little bit of that prestige that it feels like a big deal. If this was, like, a Paramount Plus or something pushing it, it would feel like, okay, that's cute, Halo. But this feels like a big cultural deal. Right, Ross?
It does. It feels huge, and it feels like they really put the budget behind it, too.
Yeah.
Because this looked like, to me, like a big-budget movie. And it was movie-length, too, so maybe that helped that perception.
Isn't that wild? Yeah, what, an hour 20, if not over an hour 20, for the first episode of this thing? That is bananas. Before we dive into all the weeds and all the fun stuff, MinMax, supported by folks over there on Patreon. We're an independent outlet. You can unlock the podcast version of this discussion, of the Max Spoilers discussion, all of the previous discussions, all future discussions, also early access to the MinMax Show podcast with no ads, and also the audio version of The Deepest Dive. There's basically just a bonus podcast feed on your phone, and it's filled with more than double the amount of MinMax content each and every week. So you can go to patreon.com/MinMax with two N's, follow the link at the bottom of the screen. You can go there to unlock the podcast version of this if you're so inclined. I'm excited. I was realizing as I was watching this, I was like, oh, this is a cool crew to have talk about this. Ross, you're very cool. There's no doubt about it. And you're certainly bad enough. But Brian Voer was thinking, like, oh man, like, we went on the Game Informer cover story for the first Last of Us game. That was probably 2012, probably early 2012, that we went out to Naughty Dog and visited them. And what do you remember from that early visit to the studio where you eventually wrote the cover story about The Last of Us for Game Informer?
Yeah, watching the show, it definitely had flashbacks as well. It's just fun to see where everything's come since then. I guess that's over 10 years ago now. Like,
yeah.
That's weird to think about. But yeah, I just remember us kind of like camping out in that fancy theater they have at the studio and just getting the full rundown. I'm like, whoa, this fungus cordyceps concept sounds really sweet. You know, they're really trying to make, like, seemingly a pretty serious, like, grown-up story, you know, which there's been a lot of fun cartoony stuff in Naughty Dog's past, but
that is,
you know, like, it was a different tone than the Uncharted stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, I definitely got obviously new Naughty Dog project was intriguing, but then when they said that one of their big inspirations was No Country for Old Men, I was like, are you kidding me? I love that. Like, and no video game has really tried to be that subtle, if you will. And there was a whole hullabaloo recently, I don't know if you saw it, but it was Craig Mazin, the showrunner, previously
yeah.
worked on Chernobyl, also a screenwriter for a bunch of silly comedies from the 90s, including the excellent Rocket Man with Harlan Williams, Scary Movie 3 and 4, The Hangover Part 2 and 3. He's had a big comedy backdrop, but then Chernobyl is kind of the one that really put him on the map in a big way. But he did an interview recently, yeah, where he talked about, like, the importance of The Last of Us, and he's like, yeah, it was so rare to have a video game that didn't star people with lasers shooting out of their eyes, and it was actually grounded. And I don't know, believe it or not, this show is going to be hotly debated because everything around The Last of Us, or just video games in general, is. But everyone was up in arms about, like, how dare you say that it was the only grounded video game out there? And it's like, obviously it wasn't. But 2013, when this game released, like, it did stand out. Like, that pitch of, like, we're trying to tell a very grounded, subtle story in a video game from a big budget, you know, studio like Naughty Dog, like, it definitely had an impact. And it was notable that there were no lasers shooting out of their eyes at any point, you know?
It was. And it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with HBO's kind of like podcast division, but they do a pretty good, like, rundown of, like, a lot of shows get an episode by episode, like, internal podcast.
Okay.
So they have, hosted by Troy Baker, talking to Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin.
Weird.
And they just kind of like walk through the episode and like how the whole project came together in the first place.
Did you get any good insight from that?
Oh yeah, lots of great stuff in there. It sounds like their mutual connection was Shannon Woodward, who played Dina in Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah.
But she's also like friends with Craig Mazin. And she was always like, I think you guys would be best friends and you should get lunch together. And they're like, oh yeah, okay, cool. But I guess Craig has always been a big admirer of the game, and he just like wanted to pick his brain about it. And then Neil, once he saw Chernobyl, he was like, oh, this guy's a genius. Let's get that lunch on the books. So they went to lunch, and it was just like, you know, obviously Craig is big at HBO after the huge success of Chernobyl.
Yeah.
And Neil's like, okay, I've had some trouble. We couldn't really get it, Last of Us, to work as a movie in my previous attempt. And if I wanted to do something at HBO, what would be the best way to do that? Well, Craig would be like, it would be pretty easy, actually. We would just walk across the street and, I would tell them that I want it to be my next project and they would say yes.
Okay.
He's
like,
nice. He's like, okay. And I don't know if they're just exaggerating, but they made it sound like they just strolled across the street. Neil sits down with Craig and lets Craig do all the talking, pitching the property that like Neil has pitched a million times, that he has like came up with, and just hearing it, someone else describe it like, so, you know, on point and, you know, right, getting all the beats. And like, he's like, I'm actually moved, even though this story is like, you know, so I'm so like
sick of it.
It's so rote to me by now. Right. You know,
but imagine if they got in that room and he started pitching it to HBO and then he immediately goes for like laser eyes or just like completely derails
and
it. And then it's just
lasers.
Hot sex left and right. And then he's like, no, meeting outside. That's beautiful that it worked out that way for sure.
The executives apparently greenlit it immediately. They're like, Craig, if we wanted something, your next product to make you float, and it seems like this is it, so let's do it. And he's like, yep. And then we just all shook hands and it was done.
That's amazing. Yeah, because
easiest pitch in the history of Hollywood.
That's right. Apparently. I'm sure. But it had that weird dribbled backstory of there was that period, I think, did they announce it on stage at like a Comic-Con that Sam Raimi was going to direct The Last of Us movie? Like that was a big thing for a while that was going to happen. I believe Neil Druckmann in some interviews recently around the show has kind of revealed, like, yeah, believe it or not, Hollywood executives did not understand what The Last of Us was. It was just classic disaster of just them pushing the silliest angle. But we should probably dive into this actual show. Ross, what'd you think? First episode, man. How'd it sit with you?
Wow. It was, like I said, it felt like such a high budget production to me. Like the production design was totally spot on. It made it, you know, it reminded me exactly of the game. The actors I thought were great. I was like, am I just going to be hearing The Mandalorian every time Pedro Pascal speaks? And I didn't. And that's a testament to him. So I thought it was great. And the thing that I appreciate about this story is that it's not trying to be like a mystery of what caused this mysterious pandemic to happen. It's like they lay out their cards immediately with this guy in the 1960s saying exactly what is going to happen and everything that's going to go wrong. And it made me wonder if like after everything goes to hell, if anybody like thought back and was like, you know what, that guy in 62 really had it right. He called it.
That was a really good interview. I never forgot about that. Yeah, especially when he goes on, but then there will be one girl who is immune from everything. Please look forward to her. And they had Big Head from Silicon Valley. Didn't expect him as like the interviewer for that 1968 thing. Yeah, that was interesting to open with that interview from the past. And it's like, oh, I guess you kind of have to set the scene in a world where you can't do finding a bunch of notes and newspapers outlying everything. So either you make it a big mystery going throughout the entire thing, or you kind of lay it all out in a way that's a little more welcoming to folks. And especially in a world, look, it's too easy to say in comparison to Walking Dead for everything, but with a show that big, obviously they talked about it. I thought it was interesting like how much they even showed before the collapse of society. I thought it was going to be a pretty quick chunk, but that was 25, 30 minutes or so. And it's like, I think that was also just a way to differentiate them a little bit from kind of jumping into the middle of things like Walking Dead.
Yeah,
it's a nice differentiator because it's still feels true to what we saw in the game.
Yeah.
But it feels like more shined light on a part we didn't see in the game, but it didn't feel like, oh, this would never happen in the game world. Like everything felt really true to that universe, it seems like.
Yeah, from what I remember from the game, everything kind of goes to hell within like 10 or 15 minutes of when you take control of Sarah. That's Joel's daughter's name, right?
Yep.
And I thought it was a nice change and a good idea to give us a day before the chaos begins to spend a little bit more time with her and get a little bit more of her relationship with her dad and kind of establish the baseline of like normal life, right? Like you're going to make some raisin cookies and then, you know, grandma starts shaking. And like, as soon as you guys saw that old lady, you're like, she's going to bite some faces, right?
Yeah, there's going to be something. And I do think that it did work well just for showing again, like we need to somehow get across in the shortest way possible, like showing the effects of the cordyceps fungus on people and the fact that it can go from somebody who's completely immobile to make them be able to charge across the lawn, even if they trip through the doorway. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but yeah, there was a moment, like the first time that dog was like staring at her. And then before that, even like when her head started to turn, I was like, oh, that's right. This is a horror show. Like I'm so used to The Last of Us. I forgot that like, oh yeah, they're going to try and scare us again. That's right. This is where the show is going. Okay. That was freaky enough. That worked.
I do want to say that dog is probably one of the best dog actors I've ever seen.
It's no dog from The Thing. We need to obviously respect the king of all dog actors, the dog from The Thing, but this dog was doing a good job out there. It was a good boy. No doubt about that.
Yeah. Did you guys feel like the opening title scene, the opening credits was laying it on a bit too thick with the fungus? I mean, maybe it's just the effect of that coming right after the 60s interview segment where you're explained what's going to be happening. And then you get the opening credits and like, look at all the fungus. It's coming for you.
I mean, that just struck me as, boy, I mean, this show probably got greenlit partly because of, hey, we got two Game of Thrones stars in here. Like, what's the most Game of Thronesy style intro? Which I know has been Prestige TV's beat for a decade now, but still, it just struck me like, God, this is so Game of Thrones. But also, I was more tickled by the fact that, like, yeah, just use the main theme from the game. I love that. Like, it's an awesome main theme. Yeah, it's tough to improve it. Throw it in there for the intro. So I was too wowed by that.
I know you've been knocking the Sonic movies for not having the right music in there, right?
It's a silly thing. I think if you got a good theme, use it. Like, there's no reason to reinvent things, you know?
Yeah, I know the composer is like Hollywood level guy already, and like it's an amazing theme. So why not just use it?
Yeah. The biggest thing, and it came out before the first episode debuted here, is they're getting away from kind of the spores in the air transmission for the virus here. And so it's interesting seeing just so much chomping on faces here in the first episode. Like basically it's a series of Resident Evil 1 zombie head turns to the camera as like everyone's walking in to see these. I haven't even checked online. I assume people are furious about the idea of getting away from like the spores in the air and the gas mask and all that stuff. But does it seem to be working for you guys from what we've seen so far?
I would imagine Pedro Pascal is bummed that the gas masks are not a thing because then he can't just have his stand-in do all of his acting.
Not that any Hollywood actor would ever do such a thing. But yeah, do you think that's a discussion of like, it has to be, right? Like we need to show these actors' faces. And so even having sections with the gas mask, it sucks and it's a little too Mandalorian.
Yeah, I think I do not. As far as a show, I don't think we need in the game. It gives you that claustrophobic feeling, gives you like a completely different gameplay style than like super crazy action or if you're fighting humans. But in the show, I can see it maybe like coming up as like one cool scene, but I don't need them constantly having to throw those things on. And, you know, it gives them a chance to find other ways for Ellie to stand out. I guess it was kind of cool that she had to wear the gas mask to kind of pretend that she could still get it. But, I don't know. I think it'll be given some chances to do a few different things. I don't mind little changes like that.
It leaves me with a plot question, though, and bear with me if this has an easy answer. But how did the virus or the fungus spread so quickly if it's not airborne? It was like we went from 0 to 100 miles per hour in like the course of a day. How did all those people get it?
A lot of nibbling. I don't know. Yeah, was it? I guess.
Is it like mono? Is it a kissing disease now?
I think so. Everyone kissed that old woman and they regretted it so hard. Yeah, it's interesting. So they say it was in Jakarta. They had that moment. And then it was like the next day it was spreading that quickly. Yeah, I guess if it's just killing that fast. That's a good question. I wonder.
I think with a fungus, you know, if they can make that old lady that couldn't really move, like speed up and catch people, like. And what we saw too is, I don't know if we're going to do a moment by moment thing, but I really love that moment where the other neighbor out of focus was like, Joel, yeah. What are you doing? You're driving like crazy. And then he runs over those two people and they're like, you maniac, what are you doing? I'll go help him. And then just, you can just barely see them getting like eaten to bits. So
that
I think
was cool.
A lot of that too was people are like, oh, this person needs help. And you're not necessarily knowing right away to run away, especially before all the news is out there. I was kind of cool the way they told it with Sarah, where she's not really like sitting down watching CNN the whole time. She's like just going about her day. And it's like, yeah, there sure is a lot of cop cars driving by.
I love that.
And they kicked me out of the watchmaker really, really quickly.
Right.
That seems ominous.
More people.
Yeah, the rising tension was really well handled, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And it turns out that everybody just needs a little more Jesus in their lives, as the old lady tells us. What was it?
Yeah.
Three nails, one cross, four given. Is that what she said? I never heard that before. I was like, oh, hey, look at that. A clever little Christian thing. I'll take it. So people are saying in the chat, maybe it's still airborne. It's just not spore based. But I do think it was interesting that like, this is, I don't know, maybe I'm just reading too much into it. But there's that shot later, and I don't want to jump this far ahead, but I will, where Joel was like showing his secret stash of stuff and he's like sliding his dresser. And they had a shot, and it was a beautiful shot, just of like the dust through the sunlight, and it looked like spores, or it just kind of like reminded us of like, oh yeah, that's kind of like the game. It's a weird thing to include. It's a beautiful shot, but if you're trying to get away and differentiate the idea of the particles in the air, it's weird to have that shot of just particles in the air. But again, they make up for it by having so many references to the game in this opening section, even just like opening on like the billowing window. It's like, okay, they know exactly what they're doing here. And I thought so many cool things like in, you know, the drive into town of going by the flaming house, all of those details, like, okay, beat for beat here. They added a lot more planes than I was expecting for the opening, but like, that's pretty cool to see all those planes coming down.
Yeah. Anytime that camera is in the back seat of the truck, it made me feel like exactly the way the game made me feel playing through that part.
Yeah. And I was, this is so small and specific, but I love that they have that exact line from the game of like drugs. I sell hardcore drugs. It was like, I always love that line from The Last of Us, the fact that it's like line for line in the show and then paying it off in a way by actually Joel selling drugs, later on in the episode.
Yeah. And how recently did you play this game? You really have a lot of specific pulls here.
Well, I have a weird thing with The Last of Us where it was all spoiled for me because I shot a spoiler discussion back at Game Informer about it with like Matt Helgeson. And I remember in that even he was talking about how cinematic the game was and all this stuff and how it would make for a great movie. So it's funny that now full circle it's come around. So it was spoiled that way for me. And everybody in like Game Informer always talked about like the giraffe scene. We're talking like best moments of the year. So I was like, oh, that giraffe scene. And then when I eventually played the game, I was like, I think that opening is cooler than anything else in the game with all due respect. But like, I love the opening of The Last of Us. So I've played through that opening a lot. And then to answer your question more directly, and I finished the game obviously and enjoyed it a lot too. But when it came out on PS5, I played through that opening again. So it's, when was that? That was just a couple months ago, you know? So it's fun to see over and over and over again. I mean, the death of Sarah is becoming one of the most iconic deaths in all of the world of gaming, because I feel like, personally, I have seen it so many times at this point.
Just one of the most bleak and depressing moments that I can imagine in gaming. And then the show doubles down on it by killing another kid immediately when we jump to the future.
I know! And she was like wearing kind of like that reddish shirt. I'm like, is this going to be Ellie? Then they're going to do another jump forward in time. But it was a really diabolical way to show just how ruthless Fedra is. So like, okay, we see that red scanner. We know what that means. And even though the lady doesn't really react, the guard doesn't really react as she's talking to her and explaining like, oh, you're going to get all the toys you want. This is going to be awesome. Get ready for this. Uh-huh. Jump cut to thrown in a fire. It's brutal.
Yeah.
My God.
It's a really nice performance in a small part by that the woman who played that guard. Like, you can just tell she's done it, you know, how many hundreds of times with how many hundreds of kids.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was a heartbreaking one. I think kind of a way to show since we go from Joel experiencing that terrible tragedy with Sarah, and we see the 20 years later, the first time he's introduced, we kind of see that juxtaposition of this is what has happened to his mind now. Now he's the one where someone's like, I cannot throw this kid's body in the fire. Now he's the one who's like, whatever, I don't, like, I'm dead inside. Right. This means nothing to me anymore. Chucking that kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like immediately way to like show how much he's changed. And what's funny is when they're talking about on the podcast, the first episode was originally going to end there.
Ooh, interesting.
And the HBO executives were like, oh, I mean, this is just our thoughts and feelings. We're just watching it, but it's kind of really dark and depressing to have two kid deaths in a row and then that's it.
So let's end it on the uplifting beat of him beating a guard's face into a bloody pulp. That'll get the kids talking.
I think what they wanted to do is at least have Joel and Ellie together and interacting and moving by the first episode. So I wonder how long the rest of them will be if episode two is more of like a trim 45 or something, just to kind of, they had a pull from that. I don't know. We'll see. I guess the first one is directed by Craig Mazin and the second one is going to be a Neil Druckmann episode.
I am wow. So curious to see that. Like, I know in interviews he's talked about just the challenges of directing and stuff, but I think that's so cool to have the co-president of one of the biggest video game developers in the world directing an HBO episode. The part of me feels like, well, video games are so big, I should stop being wowed by like Hollywood level talent and Hollywood level production. But it's like, I still think that's cool. I think that's such a wild thing to actually have the co-president of a company directing HBO. It's such a wild idea.
Yeah. And hey, let's hear it for studio notes, because I think it was a great idea to end where they ended.
Yeah.
With that killer Depeche Mode track and then zooming in to reveal the Leaning Tower of Boston. Like, I popped big for that tower.
It was a good tower. It was cool just to end on, like, I don't know, something a little more fantastical of like, okay, you can see just what this world is capable of, and you're going to see some wild stuff on this journey. Yeah, I like her immediately cracking the code of the radio book of like 60 yeah. song versus 70 song versus 80 songs. Like, oh, that's a cool idea. There's like all those little details that I got excited about, like adding a little bit more to the world, even just like them diving into like the ration cards and them like ruffling through those. I'm so curious what all of those look like. I want a breakdown of how this economy works now. And it's weird because normally with video game adaptations in general, it has to abbreviate everything and speed it up. And that's kind of the beauty, I think, of an HBO series is like, oh, in this version, we can actually add more detail to the world, which is pretty rare for an adaptation here.
Was cool to see, because I was like, I mean, so much of The Last of Us, it's like 35% rifling through drawers. And it was good to see it. I was like, well, I guess you can't really do that. But it was good to see that represented, at least, you know, marginally and in good ways that's going to be useful to the characters. It didn't feel weird, like, oh, I need to flip this over and, you know, like, get all the clues. But it was a cool way to show that Ellie, you know, she's not just a normal kid. Outside of her unique genetic traits, but she's kind of a sharp little cookie.
Sharp little cookie. Yeah.
I was a big fan of that scene in particular where they just have to wait it out until nighttime. I think it would be tempting, especially if they're already running long with this show, just to jump straight from that hallway scene where they connect Ellie and Joel and go straight to like running through the city. But the slowing it down a little bit, I thought was a great move. Partly because it, you know, gave that opportunity to show that Ellie is really smart. And then you had another moment of Joel with laying there with his broken watch and her saying, your watch is broken.
Right.
And even though he's lying still and his eyes are closed, you can see that hits him. And I just thought it was a great little acting moment and totally great for the characters.
Yeah. Not to jump again to the end of the episode, but the only thing that really bumped me, I don't like unnecessary flashbacks in shows or media. It always drives me nuts, especially it's like, this is the same episode. We are smart enough to understand that protecting a little girl as a soldier shines a flashlight and a gun at you, like, we understand what he's going through in his mind. Like, you don't need to jump back to that thing we saw just an hour ago, everybody.
Yes, 100%. My biggest complaint with the episode was that they felt the need to flash back to something that happened, you know, a half hour ago in the show when they were already doing like that, you know, a dull ringing effect that is like PTSD sound. And yeah, I was like, you didn't need to show us. But other than that, it was cool.
That's such a small complaint, though. I think for an episode and a production that has nailed so much, to be like, well, technically, it's not honoring us as being smart enough here. But yeah, totally fine, because they got so much else right. The Firefly stuff. It's cool that they make him seem like such a big deal, such a big threat, even in this first episode. I mean, when they first showed the logo. And then Fedra was like painting over it. I was like, really? Of all the problems in the world, painting over this is the top priority. But then you see like with the damage they're doing, it's like, okay, you know what? Maybe if it's that infiltrated throughout the city to the point that people are coming up to Joel and trying to recruit him. Then what does he say? Like, you ask me if I've seen the light and I'll punch your lights out. Or it's just some line like that. But that was cool.
Yeah, bust your jaw.
Bust your jaw. Yeah. Doing a real Eastwood thing as Tess references.
Yeah, when you're a proto-fascist government, I think like that is a top priority is removing all sign of dissent, right?
Yeah. And I feel like they're building up that dilemma a little bit more. Was I seeing things like the person on the roof who's was he shooting or throwing a Molotov cocktail or something? That seemed like it's going to be Bill, right? Maybe I'm out of my mind. I didn't go back and watch it again. But like the first Firefly you see on the roof, I feel like it could be what's the Bill actor name from Parks and Rec again?
Nick Offerman.
Yeah, it felt like is that Nick Offerman? Maybe I'm just connecting dots preemptively and all that stuff.
I don't know if that didn't ring to him. He didn't ring that. This like silhouette didn't ring that to me. Okay. But
yeah, it would be.
It could be a thing.
I thought he was
like kind of in a different city, at least in the games and stuff.
He should be. Yeah, people in chat are saying no, it wasn't him. Okay, thank you, chat, for letting me know exactly what I saw. I saw it. I swear it was him, you guys. No, that's fine. Yeah, I thought the Marlene actor was excellent.
Yeah, she was great. Weird trivia on that. That is the same actor from the original game.
She was so good. No, okay.
Like she just captures that character perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, that's wild. Okay.
I'm not exactly sure on the pronunciation, but Merle Dandridge.
Okay.
She is also Alex Vance from Half-Life 2.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
And she was Evelyn in Uncharted 4 as well.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I like
that. She's a Naughty Dog player.
I like that line that she had in the hallway when Joel and Tess are talking things through, and she's like, y'all talk it through, but please remember I am bleeding out right now. it's like one of the best laugh lines in that first episode there. But that was interesting too, that when she was talking to Ellie, you know, and Ellie calls her a terrorist, she's like, terrorist? She's like, was Riley a terrorist? Like already referencing Left Behind stuff. So I know in the trailer they show that flashback, but I'm really curious when, maybe like halfway through the season, they'll flashback and do a little Left Behind vignette to show more of Ellie's pre-game story here.
Yeah, do that concurrent mall storyline where she's in the mall in the present and the past.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you think they feel more liberal and like, because they know that millions of people have played the game already, they're like, we're going to tease some greatest hits. Like, they're not going to be as close to the vest with it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would love to see the breakdown of like what percentage of people watching this show know where it's going. I mean, with the audience of HBO, I know this may be sacrilegious. I'm going to go like 15%.
20%? 50% have played the game and like know the story, is what you're saying.
Or at least even if they haven't played it, they know the plot just from cultural osmosis and they're familiar enough with video games or something, right?
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think it's definitely well under half of the audience is going to have an idea of, you know, what the story is from the game.
Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm curious how many nods they'll have just for the specific video game stuff that would really stand out. I mean, the stuff like opening on the curtains is such a subtle thing that nobody else would really pick it up. But yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem like the type of show that's going to have too many kind of cheeky video game references. We're not going to have the camera move to the third person perspective at any point as Joel is running along or anything that overt, I think. Let's see. Other moments that stood out to y'all you want to unpack here?
I want to get to this, mention the radio thing again, which you touched on earlier. Do you guys think that 90s songs are just for having a good time?
Ooh, That's how it ends. Yeah, that's it's gonna end the overall show in a 90s song.
Yeah, I kind of hope that like every episode ends on an 80s monster jam to both emphasize the danger from the 80s song and just because like the Depeche Mode song hit me so hard.
Honestly, I could see them doing that. I mean, again, not everything's a reference, please forgive me. But again, with just kind of like the Stranger Things vibe, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy vibe, you know, like, hey, if we end every song with every episode with a song from the 60s or 70s or 80s as a sign of what's going on, if there's drugs in the inventory, I guess. That'd be a weird thing, but that would be a notable way to end every episode. I think that'd be kind of cool if they go through with it.
Yeah. Also, question for you guys. How confident are you that you'd be able to like identify the exact decade a song comes from so that you can interpret the radio code?
No, absolutely not. And it's impressive that Ellie, had Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, that she was familiar with that as a concept, at least, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, I got a couple songs here
you to guess
what decade in, so you know how to interpret the code. Okay,
yep, got it.
Another Brick in the Wall by Pink Floyd. What decade?
That's early 80s.
I want to 70s?
It is 1980, so Ben...
Oh, on that line. That one. These are going to be all on the line, aren't they, Ross?
Yeah, they would use that one. That's too line.
Okay. My Life by Billy Joel.
Oh, my God. His music is so timeless. It's tough.
And you're saying it's either 60s, 70s, or 80s, right? No.
Yep.
Curve. Okay. That's got to be 80s.
I'm going to try 70s again, just to keep it interesting.
Yeah, 1979.
Wow.
It's a 70s song.
Okay.
All right. I Want You Back by the Jackson 5.
Come on. That's got to be 60s. 70s. Early 70s.
Wait. Seven? Ugh. I'm just going to do 60s just so we have some interesting guesses here.
69.
Oh, sorry. Brian.
Is that two for Brian and one for Ben?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. I got just a couple more here.
I love
Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel.
How does this one go? I don't know this tune.
Like a bridge over troubled waters.
Can I turn my radio off?
You were the Garfunkel of my heart.
I don't think I know that song, at least from Brian's depiction of it. So I'm going to go with 70s.
I want to shoot 60s again.
It's 1970.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
It's like 65 or something. Okay, so you guys are tied. Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart?
I feel 70s on that one.
I'm going to go with 80s.
It is 1979.
Oh!
Yes.
It's so disco-y.
Yeah. And how about 1979 by the Smashing Pumpkins?
Great question. That's by 1994.
Oh, I was going to say. I'll go 5, but I was also going to guess 4.
95, yes.
Oh! Not a 70s. Oh! Damn it!
I think we have come to the conclusion that you would both be totally misinformed if you were living in The Last of Us.
I'd go marching off into Boston. All right, everything's going easy. I'm confident in my Rod Stewart history.
Well, it seems like they have that Billboard charts book as part of the code, right?
Right. So they can know.
Oh, that is true. Yeah.
You can kind of look it up like, oh, they don't have Shazam to like, if you can't figure out what song it is, though. You're like, wait, who does this? I don't know.
But it's nice as a way, at least, of showing that Ellie is interested in the past, especially, you know, Tess sets it up where she's like, these stupid 19-year-olds, like they don't know anything. They don't care about the past and all this stuff. And so for Ellie, at least to know what an 80s song was for her reference, I think is already kind of seeding that idea that she does have that fascination, you know, with the previous era.
Do you think they're going to find a comic book every episode for her?
Well, I do wonder. I bet at some point they will watch that. What was it Curtis and Viper 2 or whatever that DVD was? Like that has to come back.
Oh my God!
Right?
I hope so. I was dying to see that movie. It looked amazing.
It was the only complaints about the episode really are the flashback and then also just it wasn't realistic or grounded. The fact that he popped in a DVD and it started playing immediately. They had to go through like at least 7 minutes of previews and like some you can skip, some you can't. Like the true DVD experience, I feel like, wasn't
accurate.
Try to
find the top menu button.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Where's the FBI privacy warning or a piracy warning?
Right. Let's see. I thought Bella Ramsey was good so far. I think like of all the previews, they really didn't show her that much. That was my biggest question mark. It's like, I don't know what she's going to be like here. You know, I think she's 19 in real life. For her to be playing a 14-year-old, it's like, okay, I can buy it. It's a rough and tumble world. She's aging quick, but they definitely hit how much she swears in this first episode. Like, we understand that that's charming, so let's hit that button as many times as we need to just to make sure she has a memorable intro here.
I like the way she's introed is like, why would they have this girl chained up in a... I'm just trying to back out as much as possible to be like, oh, this is a neat way to do it, even though I know everything that's happening. I'm like trying to think of it as looking at it as a puzzle that's put together. Like, that's a cool way to show, like, why would she be chained up? Why would you need to do that to a little kid?
I wonder. I mean, I think that even if you didn't know the game at all, you'd be able to piece that together pretty quickly. And it's nice that they don't tease it out for too long. I feel like you see the girl chained up, like, she's very important. And there's some reference where she's like, it's not going to happen to me, is it? She had some line like that where I feel like it was pretty clear where it was going. So not the biggest deal.
Right. And another well-handled bit is just, I feel like they give you enough information in this first episode to draw some reasonable conclusions about where the show is going and what the ultimate goal with Ellie is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember, Brian, when I think of that Last of Us trip with Game Informer, I think of, like, after the first or second day of visiting the studio, you and Tim and I went to the Santa Monica Pier and remember standing in the ocean, and we just theorized about what the secret was with Ellie for like an hour. Do you remember this? Because they wouldn't say that. You just like, hey, Ellie's very important. They're trying to smuggle her across the country. And I remember we went through like every possible scenario of what her story could be. And I think it was pretty quickly hit. I'm like, well, would it be too cliche if she's the cure? I don't know. There might be something else going on. So you know what? Maybe the fact that we were so confused back in the day, and I remember being so confused, maybe that is lending more credit to the idea that maybe modern audiences were also strung along by what the mystery of Ellie could be here.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm just like, man, is everything, since I'm not used to being it from the side of like, as a show creator, like, you know, everything that's coming out, just being like worried, like, is everything so obvious? Cause like, now I'm just like, well, I know everything that's going to happen. So are they being too obvious? Are they not? You think they're rolling it out? Well, it's just like wondering that a lot from moment to moment, but
yeah,
it's nice to be able to just enjoy the storytelling ride as well.
Yeah, and I think there's still going to be, you know, stuff when they introduce new characters and stuff like that, where we'll still get moments of not knowing exactly what's going to happen, who's going to die. So I think they'll kind of have their cake and eat it too here.
Want to hear some other fun? Well, I don't want to cut you off, but is there other fun? There's other fun casting stuff.
Ooh, yeah, hit us.
You want to know about some things? So Tess is played by Anna Torv. I don't know if you guys watch Mindhunter at all.
No.
She was really great in that. But as video game players, she was Noriko from Heavenly Sword, the main character from that.
Really?
Wow. Yes.
Wow. What an odd thing.
Yeah.
Huh. I love it.
I never watched Fringe, but apparently she was in a million episodes of that as well. Gabriel Luna. Ross, did you recognize him? Tommy?
No, I did not realize that that was Gabriel Luna.
Yes, better known as Ghost Rider from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yes, that's right.
We got him, folks. The Spirit of Vengeance was with Tommy in this episode.
I think he's fine. He's just riding around on a flaming motorcycle. He doesn't have time to hop on the ham radio network and tell you he's okay.
That's right. That's right.
Good thing he wasn't driving that truck or it would have burst into flames.
That's right.
Yes, it's true. He's probably the one. Well, no, nah, he's probably not the one that lit the house on fire. But... Nico Parker plays Sarah, and if you have any guesses as to who her mother might be, once I tell you, you'll be like, oh, of course.
Wait, they're going to flash to her?
No, in real life.
Actress's mother,
right? The actress's mother.
Oh, man. I don't know.
So you're saying she's a Nepo baby?
Yes.
Extremely.
No, she's great.
She was all right.
Her mother is, I guess, her name is now Tandiwe Newton, but used to go by Tandy Newton.
Oh, Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay, also from Westworld, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
And Solo, a Star Wars story, of course.
God, I completely forgot about that. I need to watch that again. Need to watch it again. I defend
it's
that
good
movie, but I defend the soundtrack all day. Okay, we can do that Mech spoiler soon. Or a commentary track for Solo would be fun too. All right, that's cool. I'm impressed. They really did it. There's a part of me where it's like, I don't know if I'm super excited to go through the story of The Last of Us again with this show, but I think my curiosity will pull me through just on how they string all this together, where it ends. I guess it's going to be 9 episodes long. So I imagine it's just the first game. And I think the Druckmann at some point said that when they run out of material, they run out of material. It's not going to be a Game of Thrones thing where it'll continue the story of The Last of Us. And the fact that Chernobyl was such a confident one and done, it gives me a little more faith in that idea that they're not going to string this out for a really long time and kind of milk the games for all they're worth.
Yeah.
So that was going to be my big question was, are they going to Game of Thrones it? Like, because obviously you can't come up with The Last of Us Part 3 anytime soon.
Mm.
But I see that he was interested in going through the story of Last of Us Part 2 if this first season is
I mean, there's no success. Way. There's no way that they wouldn't. I don't know if they've come out and said that, but that seems pretty clear. And honestly, I wonder if Last of Us Part 2 is so big you can make a seasons 2 and 3 out of it. I wonder if they go that direction.
I bet you could. It is a huge, huge game.
I don't know how they do this.
It was my question, like, whether this first season is going to cover the entirety of the first game. Has that been said for sure?
God, I haven't dug through every interview, but all the clips and stuff, it seems that way. Otherwise, it'd be like Joel on the rebar for end of season 1 or something. But then if they've already shown the Left Behind stuff, you know, that's where it gets a little bit hazy. So I would imagine it would be, especially, I guess having confidence that they're not trying to, you know, hobbit this thing too much here.
I feel like the ending of the game is such like a big, huge, like perfect way to end anything. Like,
yeah.
How do you not get to that point?
Right. Right. In interviews, you know, Neil Druckmann said that he's enjoyed the writing room process so much that for future Naughty Dog games, he kind of wants to mirror that writing room structure. I think a lot of people misinterpreted that as meaning he meant he wanted to make an episodic game. And it's like, no, he went on Twitter to clarify. That's not what I mean. But it's interesting to see Neil Druckmann kind of move that way of like, yeah, having more writers and kind of a TV writers room mentality works out well. And I think it'd work well for games. Then also seeing that, like, you know, James Cameron also went that route for Way of Water, you know, if he also kind of had a writer's room for assembling all those movies and stuff. So it's fun to see more folks be like, you know what? Maybe the answer is just a room full of writers instead of just somebody like Neil, you know, squirreling away and just writing so much of this thing on his own.
Well, I think he did have one co-writer on Last of Us, at least two.
Haley Gross was a co-writer on two.
Yeah. But having a whole room is probably, and it takes a lot of pressure off of him too, because I'm sure he's just constantly busy and stressed and everything too.
I cannot imagine handling all that they're handling now. I'm curious to see also with this big HBO push, like Last of Us is coming to PC on March 3rd. And I want to see how much Sony pushes that. It's going to be pretty good timing probably for like where this show is ending. And so I feel like Steam games, Sony games, Sony games on Steam, I should say, like some have done well. I think like Horizon did well, God of War did well. Sackboy Big Adventure, sadly, it seemed like was tanking hard. That game's good. That game's good, everybody. So I think it's going to be a big deal no matter what, but especially coming off probably the finale or finale-ish era of this show, and I have to imagine that that'll tear it up on Steam. So I'm curious to see how that goes.
Do you guys think we'll see any promo reels of game like, hey, did you like this show? Here's the PS5 and PC. Like, will we see that
as a prediction? That's a good question. Like at the start of the show, like the start of this show, but being like, hey, check out the podcast. So at the end, be like, you've seen the show, play the game. Maybe, but I wonder if that's just kind of the HBO promotion slot at the start of an episode. I don't know if PlayStation could squeeze their way in there for something like that, but maybe it's just so implied, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can't see them like Sony being like, can we just throw us a bone here?
Like they'll do it like a Jackie Chan movie gag reel at the end credits of the final episode. They'll just be like wacky game stuff happening in the background.
Let's show you the bugs from the game. It's like, why are they doing this? You're ruining your show. You're going back to your scary movie roots. You don't have to do this. It's interesting. I did look at Craig Mazin's IMDb, and the only other thing that I saw that he directed, correct me if I'm wrong, did he direct episodes of Chernobyl? It wasn't listed on this, at least. But his only directing credit on IMDb, at least, was the superhero movie, which was like that Meet the Spartans level production comedy film. So maybe it's secretly a masterpiece and no one just watched superhero movies. So who can say?
I would love to hear the story of how he made that like hard turn into Chernobyl after kind of the resume he had.
Yeah, for sure. I'll have to listen to more interviews with that dude, and hopefully everybody just won't ask him the same question of, what's it like turning a game into a movie or a show? It's like, okay, please ask him something else. Anything else, everybody. But hats off to the team for pulling this off. And, you know, this could have gone so poorly. So many times Hollywood could have really ruined this thing. And it seems like, again, I haven't checked the internet or seen Twitter or anything, but I have to imagine it's tough not to be decently satisfied, at least with this first episode. Like, hey, it seems like they're doing it.
Yeah, that's such a tough tightrope to watch when the game is already so cinematic.
Yeah.
And to, like, it's like you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. If you stray too much, that's weird. And then if you try to repeat as much of the game as this show does, that has to be difficult too. And I feel like they totally nailed it for the first episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think you can see, contrast this with Resident Evil, who's had so many movies and shows to try to get it right.
Yeah.
And it seems like, although they've made money, like you've got the cartoony Mila Jovovich stuff, and then that recent show, I didn't watch it, but tried to be pretty faithful, and that still had issues and had that famous one season Netflix cancel, right?
Yeah. And then there was the Welcome to Raccoon City movie, which was very faithful for Resident Evil 1 and 2. I think it was just 1 and 2. I'm trying to remember if Nemesis was in that. I don't think so. I watched it. But that was an example of like, well, they're faithful. It's not good. And even then, it took some liberties, I guess. I shouldn't say they're fully faithful, but it was cool to see them try and like, okay, this is kind of a fusion of Resident Evil 1 and 2 story, and they're going to be in the police station and stuff, and still it was rough go. But we are not going to be doing episodes of Max Spoilers for every episode of The Last of Us TV show, but I can imagine us coming back for the finale and talking about how they wrap things up and stuff like that. So thanks, everybody, for watching or listening to this. Special thanks to folks who just listened to this, because that means they supported MinMax over on Patreon, patreon.com/MinMax with two N's. Ross and Brian, thank you, sirs.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Always a good time.
And as always, for Max Spoilers, let's go out on an 80s song. Take it away, Brian.
I did not have anything prepared. I'm sorry.
Take it away, Ross. Lady, so. You got it.
Oh, I was waiting for Brian. I thought this was his role.
Take it away, all three of us at the exact same time. Hang on. Let me just Google 80s.
Come on, Eileen.
And this moment,
you mean everything. Bye, everybody. Did you know that you can more than double the amount of podcasts from MinMax every single week by supporting us at the $5 tier on Patreon? You don't have to listen through the browser or anything dumb like that. You'll get access to a private RSS feed if you support us on Patreon. You put it in your favorite podcast app, and then bam, you can listen to our weekly bonus podcast Party Chat, the podcast versions of The Deepest Dives, MinMax Interviews, Max Spoilers, and you get the MinMax Show podcast a day earlier than everybody else. So please help support independent games media. Head over to patreon.com/MinMax with two N's.